As we're in the midst of this series on the book of Ruth, one of the themes that we've seen that remains consistent through the whole book is the theme of what we call the providence of God. That God is not only watching after everything and directing everything, but he is lovingly caring for us at the same time. But one of the insightful lessons of the book of Ruth is that the providence of God, the purpose and plan of God in our lives, often brings hardship, is often a very hard path to follow. Sometimes God's providence seems so hard, we don't feel like we have the faith to carry on. We don't see clearly what God is doing. Sometimes God's providence is so hard, we don't have the hope we need to sustain ourselves and hold on in spite of everything that's happening. And sometimes God's providence is so hard, we don't feel like we're loved. And because we don't feel like we're loved, we don't feel like loving others. Now, highlight those three, because you will recognize those are the three virtues Paul talks about in 1 Corinthians 13. Paul talks about these in Thessalonians. He talks about these in several of his epistles, where he ties together the virtues of He lists them in different ways. Faith, hope, and love is normally how you hear it because of 1 Corinthians 13. But in Thessalonians and others, he reverses the order. Hope, love, and faith are a different ordering of them. Because these three virtues are the most fundamental aspects of the Christian life. And these are the three that get attacked or hit hard whenever we have a frowning providence, as the hymn puts it. And in the midst of these hard, difficult journeys, this difficult path that Naomi and Ruth are on, there are obvious moments when the dark and hard providence causes one of them not to see clearly, not to act on what is happening. And I give you an example of this with Naomi. This is what sets chapter 3 off from everything that comes before it. If you remember in chapter 1, Naomi lived in a foreign land. She comes back during barley harvest, and Ruth will not let her go alone. And so when they come back into town, you remember the people said, "Is this Naomi?" which means pleasant. And she tells them, this was in chapter 1, verse 20, "Do not call me Naomi," which means pleasant, "but call me Mara," which means bitter. "Because the Lord has dealt bitterly with me, I went away full, and the Lord brought me back empty, so don't call me pleasant." Now, one of the things I want you to note is that whenever you go through such suffering and difficulty, sometimes you can't see what's right in front of you. Which Naomi says she went out full, but came back empty, when Ruth is standing right there. Now, I want you to connect how Naomi feels at the end of chapter 1 with what happens at the very beginning of chapter 2. Now, notice the very beginning of chapter 2. Now, Naomi had a relative of her husband's, a worthy man of the clan of Elimelech, whose name was Boaz. There, we get introduced in this first verse to someone who could actually help them, a kinsman who could solve this problem. But who is the person who takes the initiative in verse 2? Is it Naomi? No, it's Ruth. In verse 2, Ruth the Moabite said to Naomi, "Let me go to a field and glean in whatever field I find favor." Now, pause and consider that Naomi is the older one. Naomi's the one that trusts the one true God. Naomi's the one that's been this believer all of her life, let's say, grew up in that environment. Ruth is the foreigner. Ruth is the one that didn't know God, evidently came to know the true God through Naomi. But now that they've landed back in Bethlehem, Naomi is so distraught and disturbed by what she feels is the bitter path God's given her that Naomi is not the one that takes initiative in chapter 2. Naomi can't bring herself to go and say, "Ruth, why don't you go glean in the field of one of our kinsmen?" Chapter 2 says Ruth goes into whosoever field she finds favor, and then the way the Bible places it is that she happened, in verse 3, she happened to land in a field of a kinsman redeemer. And we know, because of the way God works, that that's not an accident. But what I want you to observe is that it is Ruth that's taking the initiative, because Ruth has not lost hope. Ruth believes God has a purpose in whatever's happening, however hard it's been. Now, the end of chapter 2, remember, Ruth comes back after gleaning, and Naomi, you can see this in verse 19 and following, Naomi says, "Where'd you go? Blessed be the man who gave you this, who took notice of you." It's like, I can't believe that God has seen fit to allow someone to notice us. And Naomi said to her, Ruth says, "The man's name is Boaz." End of verse 19. And Naomi says, with an exclamation mark, "May he be blessed by the Lord, whose kindness has not forsaken the living or the dead." So now Naomi, who had no hope, who had no sense of what to do at the beginning of chapter 2, gets excited about the possibility of God being at work in their life because Ruth happened to land in the field of a kinsman redeemer and comes home and tells her. It completely changes the course of the story, because in chapter 3, what we just read, who takes the initiative? Verse 1, Naomi, her mother-in-law, said to her, "My daughter, should I not seek rest for you, that it may be well with you?" Right? I mean, the beginning of chapter 2, Naomi's the one going out, stumbling about wherever she goes, lands in this field. Naomi could have done this in chapter 2. I mean, reasonably, she could have said, "Ruth, let me help you. I know these people. These are my relatives. These are people that I grew up with. Let me help you find a field." But she is so hurt and in such pain, she cannot take that initiative. And so the first thing that we see here in this chapter is that faithfulness and obedience has to be driven by hope. We're going to see three things in this chapter. First of all, obedience is driven by hope. You have to have some degree of hope that things are going to change, that God's there. Secondly, obedience and faithfulness to God is grounded in a deep sense of love. You have to have a sense that God loves you. As Ruth has, as Boaz describes it, we'll see, he did it in chapter 2 and it comes up again in chapter 3. You have to take refuge under the wings of God. Feel that sense of acceptance and love so you can love others. And then number 3, obedience and faithfulness is dependent on faith. So we're going to see how hope, love, and faith unfold in this chapter. Now, it's not as if one's there and the others are not. One of the reasons why this threefold virtue that Paul uses so frequently is tied together is these three are interwoven. Hope, love, and faith are all working together at the same time. But we're just going to tease it out a little bit in this chapter and show you some of these points. So number 1, obedience is driven by hope. This is Naomi's renewed initiative. This is, at the beginning of chapter 3, Naomi's faith returns. And this is why I would say faith, hope, and love are all interactive. Even though I'm calling this hope at the beginning, just pause and think about what's happening with Naomi. If I define hope as kind of holding on, Naomi's barely holding on until Ruth comes back from the harvest. And so what's taking place is Ruth coming back and letting Naomi know God's still at work because Ruth happened to land in that field. Naomi regains a sense of faith that, well, maybe I haven't put my trust in the wrong place anyway. It renews her sense of hope so that she believes there might be something that's going to change. And then that generates the love she has for Ruth. So she says, "Should I not seek rest for you, that it may be well with you?" So here's what happens. Whenever something like that takes place, faith and hope and love move us towards action. It moves us towards a plan. It gives us a sense of purpose. And that's what Naomi's doing. Just think about what she's doing here. Naomi crafts this plan. Now, I don't... There's a lot of debate over exactly what's happening in chapter 3. In some ways, in a very negative reading of it, Naomi looks like she's crafting a plan to seduce Boaz. And you can pick up any number of commentaries and they'll say, this looks like what's happening. It's not as if our Bible doesn't have such stories in there where people do things like that, right? It's all over the place. I'm not sure that's what is actually happening here. Naomi is coming up with a plan so that Ruth, this is what I think is taking place, so that Ruth can actually propose to Boaz in a roundabout backdoor way. And so Naomi has this hope that has just generated and excited her that maybe we can make this work. Boaz is one of our kinsmen redeemers. Now, we've mentioned this a few times, but if you have a study Bible, you'll have that reference to him being a near kinsman, or that phrase kinsman redeemer, being in the Old Testament the closest relative who can marry a widow and continue the family line. It's something set up in the whole nation in Israel. And so Naomi and Ruth are going after Boaz to accomplish this. The second thing that we see in Naomi's risky plan is that as she sends Ruth out, we move into verses 6 through 13. So verses 1 through 5, Naomi's regaining her sense of hope. But as we move into verses 6 through 13, this is where I'm going to draw to your attention that obedience is grounded in love. That's because in verse 10, when Boaz says to Ruth, "May you be blessed by the Lord, my daughter. You have made this last kindness greater than the first." That term for kindness is that Hebrew word, hesed, which is the steadfast, abiding love. I quoted Paul Miller last week, who described it as love without an exit strategy. So here in verses 6 through 13, one of the reasons I want to highlight this notion of love is that I do think there's a deep sense of Boaz and Ruth's love for the Lord that's then being reflected in their discussion. But make no mistake about it, the way Naomi says to do this, by Ruth lying at the feet of Boaz and then Ruth saying, "Spread your wings over me," is an appeal to marriage. Evidently, Boaz, being older, never thought Ruth would ever settle for this. Notice what's said. She comes in, she does what Naomi says. It startles Boaz in verse 9, and he says, "Who are you?" And she answered, now notice Ruth's very careful about this language, "I'm Ruth, your servant. Spread your wings over your servant, for you are a redeemer." Now, I think Ruth is using that language of spreading the wings like Boaz did in chapter 2 when Boaz said, "You've taken refuge under the wings of God." And so Ruth is saying, "Hey, I've taken refuge under the wings of God. Will you spread your wings over me and let's finish this thing so that we're all in a better place than we were?" If you read between the lines of what she's saying. Now notice Boaz's response. One of the reasons I think Boaz and Ruth are tracking on the same line and deeply caring for each other and for Naomi is Boaz's response in verse 10. "May you be blessed by the Lord, my daughter. You have made this last kindness greater than the first, in that you have not gone after young men, whether poor or rich." So Ruth's proposal encourages Boaz because he was considering that Ruth would go after a younger person. And in some ways, as an older man, is probably flattered that this could work out. But verse 11, he says, and this shows Boaz's character. Boaz, whatever is the case in this context of this chapter, Boaz has a deep and abiding love for Ruth and Naomi, and he will not betray that love, and he will not do a shorter path to get to the goal. Look what he says. "It is true," verse 12, "that I am a redeemer, yet there is a redeemer nearer than I. Remain tonight, and in the morning, if he will redeem you, good. let him do it. But if he is not willing to redeem you, then as the Lord lives, I will redeem you. Lie down until morning. And you see Boaz's character in this, because he could have easily chosen any number of things to say in that context. But what he says is, that's true. But if we're going to do this thing right, I've got to take care of this other thing first. And Boaz is a constant reminder to be faithful to whatever it is the Lord has placed in front of you. To do what you have to do, and do it well. And be patient for God's plan to unfold. And so you get on the verge of this whole thing where Naomi has regained a sense of hope that something might change, and Ruth and Boaz are interacting on this deep level of love, not just toward each other in this marriage agreement that they're trying to pull off, but a deep sense of love to God. And now Ruth finds out there's another one, and I got to wait and see. What's going to happen? How will this twist and turn? And Boaz is confident in the Lord's plan no matter what comes their way. And then finally, after we get to the end of the chapter, verses 14 through 18, not only is obedience dependent on hope, and obedience is dependent on love, grounded in love, but obedience is also deeply dependent on your faith. Verses 14 through 18, every time you face an obstacle in your journey, every time you come upon something that seems like a roadblock, you need to trust God and not take a shortcut. You need to trust that He's at work and be patient. We can look at life. You could look at your church. You could look at where you work. You could look at the school you go to. You could look at any of those things, and you could look at it and go, I think it would be better if we do this. And you have a plan in your mind for what it's going to turn out to be. And some of the biggest conflicts in communities, churches or schools or businesses, come when we have a plan and we're holding on to it and we can't let it go because it won't go that direction. And so the lesson here in verses 14 through 18 is to have the faith that even if there's a twist or turn, God is in control of this thing. And so she stayed at her feet till morning and patiently waited. Notice the language here. Boaz says at the beginning, let it not be known that she came to the threshing floor. Bring the garment you're wearing, hold it out. And he measured all this into her garment. She went to the city, came to her mother-in-law in verse 16. And Naomi says, how did you fare, my daughter? And Ruth tells her everything about the story. And now, look at Naomi, verse 17. Ruth says, verse 17, these 6 measures of barley he gave to me, for he said to me, you must not go empty-handed back to your mother-in-law. I love that little expression. Boaz is concerned in the middle of the night with Ruth, young Ruth, proposing to him to marriage at his feet, remembers to send food back to Naomi and say, don't worry, whatever happens, whether this takes a turn or goes some other way, I'm here for you. And he sends this food back. Now, as we come to the end of this chapter, I want you to consider what Naomi's been through again. The difficulty of chapter 1, losing her husband and her 2 sons, coming back to this place with only Ruth, not having the faith or hope to take the initiative in chapter 2, feeling like it's all done. Obviously, they moved. If you think about it in the bigger scope of things, obviously they moved, her and Elimelech moved whenever there was a famine in the land, so they didn't have the patience to wait and see what God was going to do in their own land. And now that woman, Naomi, says, verse 18, wait, my daughter, until you learn how the matter turns out, for the man will not rest, but he will settle the matter today. Now Naomi's the one saying, wait. Be patient. There's something at work here, and God will reveal it in His own time. And so now Naomi has re-engaged the story, jumped back into the unfolding drama that's happening here, and is guiding Ruth with this important notion of patience and love as this unfolds before them. As we wrap this up, I want to point out just a couple of observations, real simple observations. First of all, this chapter is a beautiful story of romance. There's no way around it. Ruth and Boaz are dancing a dance of romance under the authority and love of God as they try to figure out how can this work with this Moabite woman who doesn't understand the culture and Boaz. So it's a beautiful, beautiful story of romance. That's not even the main point, though. As strong as I can say that Boaz and Ruth were engaged in this romantic exchange, as strong as we could say that they lived their life as best they could, we still get to places like this and we make wrong choices. We still get to moments like this and we choose a path that we shouldn't have chosen, and yet the Lord still works. Even though Naomi was not pursuing God, God was still at work. So I don't know where you are this morning. If you feel like things are dark and you're not real sure which direction you're going to go, if you feel like there's such mistakes and failures in your past, like Ruth may feel or Naomi may have felt, and you don't think God can use you and you don't think God's present and at work, if you feel like things are just not clear for this next upcoming year and you're just not sure how it's going to go, God has a plan. He has a purpose in you being here at this church. He has a purpose in your life. And he calls us to trust him and to wait patiently until he opens the door to the plan that we can't see yet. And we realize then that he was at work the whole time. That's one reason why this message is such good news. Because God being at work does not depend on your faith, on your hope, or on your love. It depends on him. And he promises that he will see us through to the completion of the story. Let's pray.